It's the Ag Ship Podcast. I'm Patrick Mayhorn, creator of the Ag Ship, a credentialed newsletter covering Utah State athletics. You can subscribe at www.theagship.com at the $6 a month tier, $10 a month tier. There's also yearly tiers that are discounted from that. I think it's $60 and $100 a year. Ladder tier, the flagship tier, gets you access to film stories, of which there are some already out, more on the way on the basketball side, of course, on the football side as well, as well as the monthly Q&A episode of this podcast that will be coming out later this week. I just sent out questions for that, so if you are interested in that and you are not already subscribed at that tier, jump on in, send us some questions. Those of you who are subscribed, if you've not already sent in questions and you have questions, that email is in your inbox. Just pop us a question. We're going to record that, I think, on Wednesday, so you've got a little bit of time still. For everything else, the $6 tier's got you covered. All the written stories, all of the scouting reports, game stories when there's games to talk about, all sorts of other stuff by the numbers. I go a little bit nuts with it. So go on over there and subscribe if you're not already subscribed. If you are, thank you as always for your support. I'm joined once again. It's been a little while, but I'm joined once again by co-host Parker Ballantyne. Parker, what's up, man?
What's up, Patrick? It has been a while. It kind of doesn't feel that way, but it also feels like it's been a couple weeks. It's just that time of year. Mm. But we are to the point where we can take a deep breath now. It is officially the off season. I think we can safely say that because the transfer portal and then things are getting wrapped up here. So we still have a lot to talk about, but I feel like I can sleep again. So things are going great. I feel great, and it's awesome to be back on the mic. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, the portal has closed. The final entries have kind of trickled in the days since. But the portal is closed, which is good. Everybody can take a big sigh of relief or perhaps of pain for some schools and some programs, I guess.
Yeah.
they can look at the wreckage that once was. Utah State's not quite in the wreckage position in any sport, which is great. That is not necessarily what happened last year for you know, basketball and even kind of football. There was a little bit of wreckage going on, but not so much this year. There's still a little. I mean, there was a small plane crash. There was a two car accident. It wasn't a full on pile up, but there was some. Yeah. There's an incident. There's some stuff going on. We're gonna have to sort
kind of slow traffic a little bit.
Yeah,
noticed it on your way to work. For sure.
We got some road flares out. We're working on it. There's some transfer portal stuff we're going to talk about on, I believe, at least the men's basketball and football fronts. I think the women's program didn't add any extra transfers since we last recorded. They didn't go super heavy into actual like D1 or D2 or four-year school transfers. They got some JUCO players. We're going to talk through what appears to be a mostly, if not fully, finalized roster on that side, which is great. We're going to talk through some of the players who are officially now coming back, some of the new players as well for Wes Brooks' team as he goes into his first season with the Aggies. We're going to talk about the men's basketball side and some of those transfer additions as well as one departure and one player who has not yet made a decision and seemingly is no closer to making a decision who we're going to talk about the watch for that. And then we're going to talk some football stuff. It's a transfer heavy episode, a portal heavy episode, but sort of a, not necessarily a roundup because there's still more to come, but kind of a state of the union here for Utah State. And we're going to start here with basketball. We've got men's and women's up first, and then we're going to talk football down at the end of this show. Let's jump in here with the men's side. So first things first, I believe since we last recorded, I think Utah State has added three guys. I don't think we talked about Drake Allen on the last show.
I don't think so.
I don't believe he was in yet. So Utah Valley guard Drake Allen, Southern Utah guard Braden Housley, and Central Arkansas forward Tucker Anderson are all now Aggies. Utah State was up to 10 scholarship players. It is now down to 9 with the departure, not formalized yet, but the presumed departure, he's in the portal, of Josh Aduje, who had announced his return, but was, I guess, just sort of looking around the two deep and didn't see enough playing time. I think that that's really the only thing that this comes down to. I don't think that this was a matter of he got poached. I do think that a coach who Utah State has some familiarity with probably got in his ear. and I would guess that you're going to see an announcement on that front in the next couple of days. But Josh Adjei does enter the portal. But Utah State at 9 scholarship players, I think still looking for a center to go with Aubin Gatteretse and Isaac Johnson. We will see on that front, maybe a wing defender too, but as of right now, 9 guys. How are we, just as a general entry point here, how are we feeling right now about this roster?
Man, so good. Well, first of all, so much better than last year. You mentioned last year. I know it gets tired, the constant comparisons to last year. I feel so much better than I did. Obviously, that should go without saying at this point. We all remember. We all watched a nationally televised game last year where they mentioned that the year prior we lost every single returning minute, all of our points and everything. The national guys could not get enough of saying that. So I do feel better than last year. I feel so good about this roster. This staff has come in and, in my opinion, put together a really good roster with, this will be a theme on both sides of the ball here. Put together a really, both, you know, men's and women's, but put together a really solid roster with the pieces that were already there, using the transfer portal to the best of their abilities, and I think put together a good roster.
Yeah.
That Josh Adjei, you know, we talked about, you know, the small crash on the football side, the road flares and things that were out. This was a speed bump and a pretty big one at that. It was a bummer. I think losing him so late too was just such a nasty surprise. As the portal was just about closed, he snuck through. That was a bummer. But other than that, the portal was really, really favorable. Obviously, still waiting on that great Osabor decision. But really, not to say that I don't care where he lands or that I would, you know, that doesn't move the needle for me, because it does. But I would say, regardless of where he ends up, I feel really good about this roster. Yeah. Great puts it over the top for me, but even if he does walk, which, you know, I'm not even going to go there. I'm not playing coy here. I don't know. I have no idea what that dude's thinking. I did not visit so many schools when I chose to go to Utah State. I visited zero.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that thought process is like, but wherever he lands, that to me is the difference between good, you know, good and better. I feel really good about this roster pretty much no matter what happens here.
Yeah, and I think Utah State's probably in a similar spot where, like, yeah, obviously it would be really, really nice to bring back the Mountain West Player of the Year. That would be an ideal way to finish out this rotation. The spot is still there if he wants it, and the role is still very much there, and I think they would gladly... they would gladly take that, but you are not alone on the front of not knowing where Great Osabor is at right now in terms of his preferences and his decision, because nobody knows. I don't think Great knows.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think he's with me right there. I think if we were to sit down and talk about it, we would both be just as clueless as each other. I don't think he knows what he's doing yet.
Yeah, and so like, then we'll get this out of the way now. The Great Osabor watch. It continues. It continues unabated without any real news. He has now gone through...
yeah, there's your update.
Yeah, I believe he has finished 3 of his 4 visits. He has gone and visited Kentucky, and Kentucky, as he was there, took another center, and he is no longer considering Kentucky. He went to Louisville, and then he most recently was on campus at Texas Tech. Now, I believe he is en route to Washington for his final visit that he had scheduled. We'll see. I really, really would be, I think I've said this on the show before, I would be very surprised if Great Osabor goes to Washington. It would not be like, I'm not saying 0% chance. I would be surprised if that happens, but that's where he's at right now in terms of his actual, progress on visits. It is radio silence on that front, at least, from his side. And it seems like every school he has visited has felt worse about their chances of landing him after he has been there than they did before, which is not usually how it goes, but that's where he's at right now. I think Utah State is still very much involved here. Utah State obviously does not have the funds to match what some of those schools can offer, but we'll see. I don't think I would not count out Utah State as a possibility for Great Osabor. I will say that. That is not me being coy. I don't think it's zero. I don't think that the chance is zero. I do think that there is a possibility, and Utah State is working to explore that possibility. I don't think that Utah State has given up that battle at all. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Hopefully there will be some clarity on that situation sooner than later.
Yeah, absolutely. But, and again, we're not the only ones wanting clarity on this. I think the coaching staff is very, very anxious. And to me, that's the biggest sign that Utah State is still in the mix here, because Jared Calhoun and his guys are going to go find a center if they get the sense that they are out on Great Osabor. They're not going to sit around and you know, throw next season out the window because some guy made a different decision. I think they would have moved already if they were out. So yes. I think they're probably still in the mix.
Yeah. I mean,
we are talking Monday night. This stuff moves fast, but as of right now, I would say Utah State is solidly in the mix here.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you right now, I think that Carter Welling from UC Irvine is probably signed to play for Utah State right now if Utah State thought that it was out with Great Osabor. And he's not. He's headed to Utah Valley with his brother. That's what it is. That's the deal. So we'll see. Utah State continues to battle there. As for the guys who are committed, the guys who are coming in, confirmed, official, presumably they can't re-enter the portal at this point. I don't know if there's a statute of limitations on
that. You never know these days.
I would be pretty surprised. I don't know if they've been officially announced as signees yet. That's the last real hurdle you got to get through. But I mentioned them earlier. We'll go through in order, I believe, of when they committed. So I think that would be Allen, then Anderson, then Housley. Which is good, because Housley is the one I've not yet written the full scouting report on. I have watched him, so I can speak at least somewhat authoritatively. You're just going to have to listen to me as I kind of work through some thoughts that I have about Braden Housley that I've not yet fully fleshed out. So Allen is up first. I think probably a pretty familiar name at this point for Utah State fans. He was at Southern Utah last season, or two seasons ago. He was at Utah Valley this past season. This is now his fourth different college in the state of Utah. He started at Snow College. He's from Eagle Mountain originally. Pretty good player. I think Drake Allen is an instant star or anything like that. I also don't think that that's really what he's being asked to do. I would guess that Dayton Albury is probably going to start at point guard, and that Drake Allen will play a lot of minutes off the bench. And for that role, I don't know that you could do a whole lot better than this. He's a 2-year starter who was very, very, very solid, very good in the WAC for two different schools. Two wildly different offenses as well. He showed kind of different skill sets at times in these last 2 years at Southern Utah. He was honestly a pretty decent shooter, not on a ton of volume, but he shot 35.6% from three in 2023. This past year, that really collapsed, but his passing got like 10 percentage points better by assist rate. His turnover rate dropped by 6 points, despite the fact that he moved from a Southern Utah offense that was solidly good to a Utah Valley offense that was awful. It was truly, truly just a terrible offense. It was not good. I think Drake Allen was just about the only player in that offense who I would trust to score the basketball consistently, and his assist rate still rose by 10 points, which is really impressive, and I think that probably is the thing that caught Utah State's eye, is the idea of like, hey, what if we gave him good teammates instead of bad teammates? How would that help him?
And the answer is, we have a surplus of those. Yeah. So we can use that.
Yeah, that could be advantageous. A guy who managed.
Isn't it crazy how good basketball players combined with good basketball players is like almost always a good thing?
Seems to be
the crazy.
Case. Yeah.
What a concept.
It's a good approach. 32.3% assist rate at Utah Valley. That was 40th nationally for him last year. That was the number from KenPom, the number 283rd offense in efficiency, 305th in effective field goal percentage. And he still had a 30-plus percent assist rate. That's really, really impressive. That's very good. And it shows up on his film, as does their awful offense. It was really watching both of the guards, as we're going to talk about with Housley. I think even watching Southern Utah, for me, was more frustrating, which is impressive. That offense whoo boy, I've got some things to say about that offense. But I'll save that for a minute from now. But yeah, if you're bringing in Allen as a playmaker who can step in off the bench and you know he can handle either guard spot as you need him. I guess there are three guard spots, but either shooting guard or point guard. I would guess he'll probably play primarily as a point guard. Capable on ball defender, not amazing, but capable. Pretty good finisher. Very awkward in the way that he moves. I say that as a compliment. I mentioned this in the scouting report. He moves very much like somebody who played shortstop in high school, which he did. Like more flexibility than you would usually expect, like lower body flexibility from somebody who's 6'4". You don't see that a lot, and he uses that to his advantage and really kind of throws defenders off because he's like herky jerky. He moves weird and it's hard to stay in front of him. That's a good trait for a guard to have, especially a bigger guard. He knows how to use that size to his advantage. I like him. I think he's got some stuff to figure out as a shooter. If Utah State wants him to be a reliable or even somewhat reliable 3-point option, he can hit them, but his form is just a little funky. He's very, very dependent on his footwork, and when he can't get the footwork exactly the way he likes it, it kind of messes up his whole shot. That's not great. That's something that usually kind of, you can't just put a Band-Aid over that. That's sort of an off-season of fixing it, of changing the way that he shoots to try and repair that, which is, it is what it is. He can still score at the rim if he passes the ball as well as he did in 2024. If he can play defense coming off the bench, get to the free throw line, all that stuff, you're fine even if he doesn't shoot a ton of threes, even if he doesn't hit a ton of threes. But I do think he can if Utah State wants to put its focus there, and I think the rest of his game is pretty much good at this point, and so you can basically spend an offseason doing that if you want to. So I'm interested to see what they do with him development-wise. That he made that big of a jump as a passer, as a rising junior, is impressive as well. It says that he can continue to develop even as an older guy, which you don't see a ton. So I like it. I think it's a good addition. Yeah. He's physical. He's a good enough athlete to play at the Mountain West level. He's not like a superstar or anything like that, but he's a good player, and I think he's the kind of guy who is good to have on your team. He does smart things. He makes things easier on his teammates. That's a good piece to have.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I'm just looking right here real quick. Older. You said he's an older guy. How old is he? I know he's going to be a senior this upcoming year, right?
He's a rising senior. I don't know if he like went,
his actual if he age.
Went on a, yeah, I don't know if he went on a mission.
I mean, that's what I'm basically getting at here. Yeah. I'm looking at his.
Let me see.
I know for sure that Housley did. I don't know if he did. Either way, I mean, to make those improvements as a junior is huge.
Yeah.
Either way, to be completely honest, and to your. The only thing I would really add to what you said, I don't know if you exactly mentioned it. You talked a lot about it. You talked a lot about his assist rate. I would just point out his turnover numbers as well.
Yeah,
pretty impressive. He averaged like 2 turnovers a game this past year. With that 4.3 assist number is pretty impressive. So he did come a long way in not only becoming a passer but protecting the ball pretty well.
Yeah,
that's something we got pretty used to last year with Darius Brown. I don't think he's Darius Brown-esque really in a lot of ways, but that is something we got used to as Aggie fans, and I would like to see that part of the game continue. I hate turning the ball over, and I like assists, so
yeah,
I like that a lot.
Yeah, kept the turnover rate relatively low, given again the teammates around him. 17% is
that's true.
Yeah, it's not amazing, but also like the team average was 18.1. They were 251 in the overall ranking, so he was better than the rest of the team basically at cutting down on turnovers and improved on that by 6 points from the 2022-23 season. That's good. That's another thing that I think travels and probably improves even further with better players around him. I don't have any issue with that. I don't really have a ton of concerns with that. Good pickup. I think if you're talking about signing up backup point guards, it is hard to do much better than this. That's the role here. That's good. It's good. The more talent you have, the better. I will get out in front real quick before we go even further. I will get out in front of this and say taking these two guys, taking Allen and Housley, is not why Josh Adjei hit the portal. I don't know why. I don't know why anybody thinks that. I don't know where people are getting that from. They play different positions. It is a completely different position than what Josh was going to be asked to do. They're not related. It is not. Everybody's freaking out when Josh Adjei hit the portal, and they're like, "Oh, well, they took too many guards." Like, these are point guards. Josh Adjei is a small forward. It's a different job entirely. If anything, Tucker Anderson would be the conflicting guy there.
Sorry, what was that last part?
I said, if anything, Tucker Anderson would be the conflict point, and I think that that's probably what happened. We're going to talk about Tucker Anderson in a second. I will set people at ease with that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good call out. I mean, bringing in two point guards, the team was already looking for point guards. I mean, even Danny Sprinkle was saying, hey, he didn't come back, but obviously he was saying, like, what do we need to do this offseason is bring in a point guard. I mean, neither of these guys are probably exactly what he had in mind, but we knew we were bringing in point guards, guys. Like, that happens every year. It's like a quarterback. Like, can you have really too many backup point guards that are good and formidable and fit in? Like, if they fit in, you can't have too many. And I think these guys both do.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I don't think Housley's, we're going to talk about this in a little bit. I don't think Housley's expecting to play all that much this year.
He's young.
Yeah. He's a rising redshirt sophomore. He's got time. He can play a very small role this year. And I think he wanted to do that to try and set himself up to be the starter, or to at least get a foot in the door to compete for the starting job next year, which you don't get a ton of guys who were, you know, all whack, all freshman team picks, started every game, who want to do that. That's good. There's no downside to doing that if he's willing to take on that role. That's a good thing to do. It's more talent is better than less talent. And I think that, like, you know, if we're comparing, like, you bring in Albury, and then if the option is like Javon Jackson or Drake Allen and Braden Housley, and Javon Jackson didn't want to come off the bench, he wanted to start, I think you do what you have to do, and you landed with a pretty good trade, all things considered. And I think Utah State's probably pretty happy with its point guard room, which is better than it was about a month ago when they didn't have any point guards. So I feel pretty good about the guard room in general. Expand that to, you know, Ian Martinez, Mason Falslev. That's a pretty good core. Losing Josh stings, but I think that Tucker Anderson, who we can move on to now, helps take away a lot of that pain, because I will tell you, watching this kid for the scouting report, writing the scouting report, true freshman at Central Arkansas last year. I think he was the freshman of the year or the rookie of the year or whatever they call it in the Atlantic Sun. I was blown away with not necessarily the entirety of his game, because I think that he's not quite there in a lot of stuff that he does. His mid-range is just, it's like a foot off, or not even a foot, it's like a couple inches off. And I think that he'll probably lock that in. He's never going to be an amazing passer. He's capable. His rebounding is kind of the same thing. His defense is kind of the same thing. It's hard to blame him too much for his defense, because Central Arkansas was like one of the worst defenses in America. But the thing you get, the reason that you sign up Tucker Anderson, is for the 3-point shooting. He was terrific from 3-point range as a freshman, and he was around 38%. He took a ton of threes. He hit a ton of threes. And when you watch him play, it's not just a matter of, you know, he finds a way to hit shots. He looks, he's professional in the way that he approaches perimeter shooting. It is the kind of thing where I don't think it's ever going to be anything other than an extreme strength for him. Like, I don't see him struggling through slumps very often. I think it's going to be a consistent point of significant ability for him, because his shooting stroke is so smooth and so quick, especially for somebody who's 6'9". He doesn't jump a ton. Most of the work goes up top, and it's the same thing every time up top, which is what you want, but he can vary his footwork. He can shoot from any number of angles. He's so quick on the draw, and he does a lot of the stuff that, you know, really good spot up shooters do, where, you know, he's waiting for the pass. He's rolling around the arc. I posted a clip of this. He's, you know, looping around the arc to the right, and before the ball even gets to him, he's already squared his body to the basket. He's ready to shoot as soon as the ball gets there. he's a really, really, really good shooter. He's 6'9", which you don't get a ton. You do not see a ton of guys as tall as him, as long as him. I would guess his wingspan's probably up over 7 feet just from looking at him. He's all arms and legs. You don't get a ton of guys with that sort of length where you really can't defend his shot realistically, because he's so tall. And the combination of size and quickness you would need to both get up there in time to actually contest the shot when it's going up, and to have your arms be that long and to be big enough that you can do that, there's just not a lot of defenders in the world who can do that. And so he really can't be defended from three, and he's extremely efficient when guarded, when unguarded. His numbers were basically the same, shooting-wise, guarded versus unguarded. He took a ton of guarded shots and hit them like 41% of the time. He's just terrific. He's a really, really, really gifted shooter, and I think he is, you know, probably one off season away and a little bit of just growing into his frame a little bit more, because he's very skinny, very lanky right now. I think you give him one more off season of development physically, he's ready to go. He's plug and play, you know, first or second scoring option, I think, on a Mountain West level team, absolutely. And I don't know if he'll be doing that for Utah State, because there are plenty of other scoring options here, but he is that level of player. He's an NBA level talent. And I think ultimately, as much as like Josh Adjuge, you know, deserves all of the love and affection and you know, all of that from Utah State fans, terrific player. Ultimately, if it comes down, and it's not as simple as this, but if it boils down to, you are offered a trade of potentially 3 years of Tucker Anderson or one of Josh Adjuge, you don't really need to think twice about the trade. It is what it is. This guy's really, 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 he's going to be playing in the NBA. That is the level of player that Utah State is working with here. He is an incredibly gifted and just special scorer.
Yeah, this guy is very, very good. The main thing I have to add on this guy is some really in-depth analysis here. For some reason, he is listed in, his height and weight is listed in metric on the ESPN website, and I don't know why.
That's strange.
That is my main takeaway for this. So in case we have any listeners across the pond, he is indeed 86 kilograms and almost 2.1 meters. So no, this guy is very, very good. The way that you described him is the probably the same way I would. You've obviously gone way more in depth on this than I have, but we throw the word around a lot, which is professional, on this like podcast. We talk about that a lot, and I think we mean that in a different way. You and I mean it in the same way, but like I think we mean it in a different way than some people might refer to that. Like I consider him like he has a professional approach to the game. He's a very serious player. Mm-hmm. And that's how I would describe this guy. I mean, his talent is there, and it's coming. Like you said, I think he's one off season away from just exploding. But his approach, everything else, kind of the stuff that's, you know, intangible a little bit, really, really hard to pinpoint what it is. He has it. He just has that it factor, the way he approaches the game, the way he plays, like the things he's doing with his body. Like he knows what he's doing. He knows where he's supposed to be. He seems like a pretty high IQ guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, just a really, really solid approach to the game. And once he's like, just, you know, screws down the bolts on just a few of his actual gameplay things, this guy's potential is really, really high.
Yeah. Yeah. I had his, I hope I'm not blowing up this guy's spot. I don't think he would mind. His, Tucker Anderson's high school coach reached out to me shortly after the commitment, and was basically saying things along the same line of like, I've never really seen a guy who works like this guy does before.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, you see it in his game. You see, he looks like somebody who has really taken to heart all of the Kyle Korver videos that he's watched over the years. Like that is
this dude has like a Kyle Korver poster.
Absolutely. He's
for
watching,
sure.
He's watching the Klay Thompson clips. He's watching the Kyle Korver clips. Like that is, and it transfers, and that's not, that's not a super common skill. There's a lot of basketball players who can do that. But to be able to, you know, he's doing stuff that you would not learn from anybody other than like a professional shooting coach or from the ability to mirror what you are seeing. And I, maybe he had a professional shooting coach. I don't know, but he's very good at it. However it came about, he's very, very, very gifted as a shooter, and he knows exactly what he's doing, and his technical, there's really nothing, I have zero negative to say about his technical ability as a shooter. He looks perfect. Yeah. It looks exactly what you want it to look.
Well, and you mentioned Klay Thompson too, and I'm glad you did, because I don't know what it is about his game, but I was kind of picking up on that. Like, I was going to make that comparison, but I didn't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
But he does have a little bit of, like, prime Klay Thompson in him, where I think there was a time where it was probably, like, Klay Thompson and maybe Kawhi Leonard, where you could just plug them into any team and it would automatically get better without making any other moves. Like, Klay Thompson, I don't think, was ever the best player in the NBA. He was, you know, when he was at his peak, Steph Curry was the best player in the NBA. But in order to have a good, like, in order for Steph to improve your team, you probably had to make other moves and build around Steph. Klay did not have that. And I think Tucker Anderson is that same way, where he is the definition of a plug and play. I think he makes almost any team at this level anyway better. I think he probably walks into any gym in the Mountain West and makes your team better.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't need you to change the way you play on either side of the ball. He doesn't need you to change your roster composition. He just steps in and hits shots, and he has a game that can translate into a lot of different styles depending on who your coach is. So I really really like this guy. Plug and play. I think he just makes your team better, and off the bat.
And the thing with that, and I kind of hammered on this in the scouting report, like, the thing that is very interesting about him as a shooter, I mentioned this earlier with the guarded versus unguarded stats, and why you don't really have to adjust to him. He doesn't actually have to be open, like, at all. He just doesn't really need it, because his release is so quick, his overall shooting motion is so quick, and he's so tall that if he just has the space to jump, basically, he's fine. He's open. That's open for him. If he's on the correct side of the half court line and he has the ball, he's open. And that is an extreme weapon to give somebody like Jared Calhoun, who I don't think he needed a guy like that. I think he's very happy to have him. But there's plenty of open shots in his offense, and Tucker Anderson doesn't need any of them. His shots are going to be open with or without a defender in the vicinity, because there's just, he's 6'9" and he can shoot from 10 feet beyond the 3-point arc, like, comfortably. He can shoot from the logo in, basically, and that's a problem. That's a pretty significant matchup problem for opposing defenses, because you have to, I mean, unless Utah State plays Max Ogbonpolo in Montana State, there's just not a lot of 6'9" guards out there. Guys who can reasonably expect to keep up with him quickness wise, who are then also tall enough to contest anything that he's doing. You really have to decide between, you know, are we willing to sacrifice a big to try and stick with this guy just so that we can defend a couple more shots? Or are we going to give up 5 inches and put our biggest guard on him and just hope for the best and not let him drive and finish? Cause he shot like 65% at the rim too. Like he's a matchup problem. He is an instant, no matter what your offense is, and Central Arkansas's offense was not terribly advanced. No matter what it is, he is a matchup problem that has to be reckoned with anytime he's on the floor, because he can score from anywhere. He can score from absolutely anywhere. And I think that once he, you know, once he really kind of finds his range from the mid range, which, like I said earlier, it was very close. A ton of those shots were very close. He becomes he's just going to score. He's just going to score. It doesn't really matter what you do, on either side. It doesn't really matter what Utah State does. He's going to score. He's that kind of player. And I think that that's really a guy who this roster was missing. And he fills that spot perfectly. I would be pretty surprised if he doesn't start. I think that he is that level of player from day one, basically. He's very, very, very good.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I just love guys who are, you know, represent a headache for an opposing coach. Like, if you're the type of guy that can make a coach really, like, scratch his head and think twice about things, I just love that style of play. And that's more of a style thing than a skill thing, you know? I mean, you look at some of our best players, and, you know, even recently you look at Great Osabor, and it's like, he's really, really, really good at what he does. but you kind of know what he is, and just stopping him is still hard. This is kind of a different breed where, well, actually, you know what? Gray had some things going because he was pretty quick, but you get my point, hopefully. But you know, Tucker Anderson is kind of different where it's just like, oh, what do you do? Like, just how do you respond to him? And it's not even just that he's so good, it's just that he kind of does everything and he's really good at most things. And I just love players like that. It's just an instant day one improvement. I think I'm with you. I think he's probably a starter.
Yeah, he is a weapon immediately. I'm very excited to watch him play. Last of the three here, we have alluded to him already, but Braden Housley. Like I said, I would expect he is coming in largely for a year of development. I don't think you're going to see him on the floor a ton this year. That's fine. Utah State has two veteran point guards it can trust. If it needs him, it has him. That's nice to have. He started, I think, every game this year as a redshirt freshman for Southern Utah. He played almost 90% of the available minutes. That is ridiculous to ask that of a freshman point guard. The 87.4% minutes played. That is crazy. 87.1%.
That's so much.
Dude, you got to get another point guard, Southern Utah. I don't know what you guys are doing. So that's, I kind of actually want to, I think that's where much of what I have to say about Braden Housley kind of stems from, is that I know that the advanced stats are not going to blow you away, right? They're fine. For a redshirt freshman, these are pretty good numbers. His shooting was not great. 44.2% effective field goal rate. He didn't shoot well from three. He was decent at finishing, but and he got to the free throw line a good amount, which is nice for a point guard. He's got good size at 6'4", 180, 33.5% free throw rate. You can live with that as a point guard. Decent steal rate, 2.4%. He had more assists than he had turnovers, 19.1% assist rate for the 17.7% turnover rate. All of this is fine, right? You're not, this is, especially given the circumstances, when you're plugging him into basically your number three point guard spot, that's totally fine. You can live with that. You can work on a lot of that stuff. There's nothing physically wrong with him. There's nothing that is immutable. I think he has a lot of skills that can very easily grow within a better roster, basically. And I think that honestly, a lot of the shortcomings within his advanced profile, and like, it's not anything glaring. It's just that it's not amazing numbers. I would blame a pretty decent amount of that on what I really honestly, I don't think I could describe Southern Utah's offense fairly as anything other than just a complete mess. It was just freelancing. There's no plays. There's no real even, there's no spacing. There's no structure. It is, honest to God, one of the worst offenses I have ever seen on a college basketball floor. It was a disaster. I sat down and watched their entire game against Grand Canyon earlier today, and I was like, I got to be into the second half, and they were losing the game, and every offensive possession, I was just like anguished. It was upsetting to watch them play basketball, because it really was just take the ball down the floor, maybe somebody sets a ball screen. And then if the ball screen doesn't work, you try to get an entry pass to Parsifala. If that's not there, you pass to one of the other, you know, guards or wings, and then they play iso ball and they fall down, and then the ball goes in the other direction. And that was pretty much the entire structure of the offense. Is that they would try to find an isolation matchup for a guy who would then dribble into the paint, dribble the ball off of his foot and fall down, and then ask for a foul and not get it. It was a lot of that. It was primarily that. And that he was capable as a redshirt freshman within that system, more power to him. That is, he was carrying a heavy load as a redshirt freshman, and I think he's probably going to be very excited to play within an offense that has things like plays or spacing or anybody who knows what they're doing at all on a basketball floor. Anybody at all. It was really, I mean, it was offensive. It was an offensive basketball experience watching these guys play on offense, and I don't blame him really at all for any of his stats. I think he'll benefit greatly from just being at Utah State, being in a better position. He's a talented player. I think he will get better with a year of development, and I think that if this is the guy who you're bringing in for your third point guard spot, a guy who started 29 games as a freshman in the WAC, you're totally fine. You're happy with that. That's a good addition. You're not going to do a whole lot better than that for that role. That's a hard thing to recruit somebody to have him give up a starting spot that he already had as a redshirt freshman to basically sit on the bench for a year. Not a ton of guys are willing to do that, and that you can get a guy this capable and with this much potential and clear room for growth. You have to feel pretty good about that. I think it's a good pickup for Utah State.
Yep, I agree with all of that. I think it's a great pickup. I mean, we've had plenty of those this year. Seems like every other day we're just getting news that, like, oh, Utah State adds yet another formidable guard or something to their lineup. I like this move. I like what it is for. I mean, he doesn't have his red shirt year. He already used it, so he's not coming to red shirt. He's coming to play, but he's also not, I don't think, coming to start. And I think that kind of, you know, I think there's that's probably been agreed upon, right? Like, I think he knows what he's getting into. We know what we're getting. I think it was just, hey, if you guys can get me out of this offense, I will be your water boy for a year. Like, just get me out of this offense and get me into an offense that runs plays. I'll do whatever it takes to get there. But he's really, really good. Another Utah kid, which, you know, just going back to some of the intangibles that you talked about, I mean, yeah, there's nothing about his game that's alarming. It's good. He's good. But it's another Utah kid, and I think it just helps. You know, he's from Lehigh, went to SUU. We said earlier he went on a mission, so he's a bit older. But I think anytime you bring in new coaching staff, that's one of the first things you worry about. I think especially at Utah State, I think we're, you know, as fans of Utah State, we're particularly in tune to our relationship with the local talent scene because, I mean, let's be honest, we know where we fall on that totem pole here in the state. And so it's just good to see guys like that. I mean, clearly Jared Calhoun has a good relationship with local talent. He didn't bring in a lot of high school guys, but you're bringing in local guys. This is just, it's good. I like this pickup. We will see probably a lot more of it in a couple of years if things go according to a plan. But yeah, he's solid. He's a good player.
Yep. So I think that'll do it on the men's basketball front. I don't think we have anything else there. Still a little bit quiet. I would guess that more news coming soon. They're, again, sort of in wait and see mode with Great Osabor. So we'll see what the next couple days look like.
He's going to commit as soon as we stop recording. Oh, of course. It's going to happen. Yeah, so absolutely. We'll see.
Yeah. as soon as I hit the stop button, I'm going to get the tweet notification. That'll be fun. Women's basketball. As I said,
here we go.
Roster here looks to be just about finalized. By my count, they're sitting at 14 players right now. It'll work out. It always does. I don't know exactly. I don't know even if the scholarship limit is 13 or 15 on the women's side. I don't remember. I think I learned that once, and I have since forgotten it. But they're sitting at 14 right now. It is not worth worrying about scholarship counts at this point. It'll work itself out, like I said. By position room here, and we're not going to pick through every one of these players, and we've talked about a couple of them already. But by position room, they've got 6 guards, 4 wings, and 4 forwards. Among the new faces, Elise Livingston, who we talked about a couple episodes ago from Ridgeline, Danae Skelton, Ava Smith, Cheyenne Stubbs, Mia Tarver, who's coming in from Salt Lake Community College, Isabella Tenedo on the wing, Carly Banks, who I believe was super, super productive high school player in Idaho, if I'm remembering correctly. I think that she's the one that applies to. Ivory Finley, Jamison Heaton, Carly Lotta, and then at forward, Gracie Johnson, Sophie Sen, another JUCO player, might be another Salt Lake Community College player. I don't remember exactly. But another JUCO player, Samiana Sugataraga and Alizi Verdan. So that's what we're looking at here. I don't have a ton to say about any of the newcomers. We're going to talk about the roster building approach writ large in a second, but I will clear the lane for you here. Some pretty important players coming back. Some pretty important players that Utah State has successfully retained here who just did not even enter the portal. Never, you know, didn't do it. They just stuck around. Westbrook kept them around. I think that the core of, 6 players who are back here, that we talked about on an episode or two ago, but to keep those players around, obviously some very big names in there, Cheyenne Stubbs, Ivory Finley, Gracie Johnson being the biggest one, Samiana Sugataraga, those are big deals. Yeah. I'll let you go on just the importance of keeping those players around.
Okay, yeah, so I mean, to say that he kept in place like some of these great players. I mean, that's somehow everything that you just said is an understatement, and everything that I will say will somehow also be an understatement. Well, first of all, before we get into that, I do know, I can confirm now, it is 15 full ride scholarships for D1.
Okay.
Because I sat here thinking, man, I don't know that easy. I don't know that either. And then thought, I wish there was a way I could find out. And so I Googled it real quick. 15 scholarships. I'm counting 13 on like the roster on Utah State's website. I think we have 13 as well, right? So those two.
We have 14. Carly Lotta.
We have 14.
Carly Lotta was not listed on the roster. She signed back in November, and I'll say I got a message from someone who would know that told me that she's on the roster. So I believe she's
on the roster.
I'm
not arguing with that one.
I'm pretty confident that they would know.
The website's wrong. I'll tell you that. The website's wrong.
So I think Carly Lotta will likely also be on the team, which puts you at 14.
Yeah, so there's our 14. But like you said, it'll work out. Like that's not a big deal. I was just pulling that out. Because I Googled it. So roster composition, the girls that he brought back. I mean, let's not bury the lead here. Let's talk about the 1/2/3/4/ all of them that he brought back. The big one is Cheyenne Stubbs, obviously. Like that is the big piece that he was able to bring back. This was probably also the biggest question mark closing the season last year.
I was pretty surprised that she didn't even enter the portal.
That part is just shocking.
Yeah, because it's not just like she's shocking. A Utah. She's not from Utah. She's from Florida. I think would have had suitors. She's good. She was good on a bad team.
I know for sure she would have had suitors. Yeah. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying I watched her play basketball.
Yeah.
She
would have. She just would have. And so that's a big deal. And I think that this is really like, she is really an ideal fit. I think it's probably a 1A, 1B situation with most important returners with Gracie Johnson, who we're going to talk about in a second. But like Stubbs is a really, really good fit for this system because she's very fast. She has the stamina to play significant minutes. She probably won't need to play quite as many minutes this year as she did last year, which I'm sure she's relieved about. And she can do that exact like 94 feet of hell system that Westbrook seems to want to install. She fits that really nicely. She is, I just, a nightmare to deal with, I think, defensively, if you have to worry about Utah State playing at tempo on either end. She can absolutely push the tempo and I think is more than comfortable playing within a system that does that. I think what a joy it is to be talking about Utah State women's basketball having a system that they want to play. Having an approach to basketball. She's great for that. She's proven herself to be more than capable of getting, you know, getting points and getting shots in the Mountain West. She's a good player, and I think she is going to benefit significantly from the change of scenery around here and around this program.
Absolutely. Well, if she wasn't, she would be gone, right? Like, she would not have stayed if she was not certain that she would benefit from that. Like, she could have left. She could have played within reason anywhere she wanted to. She's from Florida. Florida has a ton of schools, like a ton of schools that she could have gone home to and played for. The fact that she's coming back, and I said as much on Twitter with her and Gracie Johnson, the fact that they're coming back tells you everything you need to know about what that locker room looks like right now. And it's not the same. They both would have left. They both would have had suitors, probably some money on the other side of that too.
Yep. And Johnson is the other one. Johnson is the one that was, I think, kind of everybody was sort of waiting and seeing on. I think she was pretty likely headed to the portal. That was the original plan, and she changed her mind. That is the word on that. I don't think I'm telling tales out of school. I think Utah State and Westbrook's and this new staff really, you know, sold her and convinced her that this was the place where she could continue to develop and where she could become, you know, a star as soon as this season. And, you know, that's a massive win. That's a really, 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 really big win, because I think that she is one of the best young players in the conference, right? I don't think that's crazy at all. I think one of the most talented young players in the league.
I would 100% agree with that. There's some really, really good freshmen in this league. San Jose State, I actually haven't kept up with their roster composition, because keeping track of our own is hard enough. There's so many moving pieces. But as these rosters begin to solidify, we'll be able to see what the rest of the landscape looks like. But she was, without a doubt, she probably had the highest ceiling of just about any player that I saw this year that didn't play for UNLV. And I don't think I'm – I know I sound like a homer, but I don't think I'm being one. Just the raw ability that she had. We kind of talked about some of these things throughout the season. The fact that she is as tall as she is, I'm pulling it up right here.
She's 6'6", if that's what
you're saying. 6'6", yep. Yeah. So, man, 6'6", and does not move like a 6'6" person in a good way. You know, mm-hmm. She's not tripping over herself. Like, her body control is very, very good. She kind of has a stroke from mid range, which is really impressive at this level. You can tell that she grew up playing basketball with two Division I brothers. Like, she just plays very, very tough. It seems like she comes from a basketball family, and it's because she does. She has such a high ceiling, and bringing her back, convincing her that this is the place for her to develop, is huge. Yeah. So between those two, I mean, those are the big ones. You know, Cheyenne Stubbs, who, I mean, 94 feet of hell is the best way you can describe her on both sides of the court. Like, she's just so frustrating to play with. I said it throughout the season. Like, if she was just taller, she would be a cornerback. Mm-hmm. Like, she's so frustrating on defense. We've seen what she can do on offense. That stuff is, you know, that's what we've been talking about all year. And then Gracie Johnson, it's almost the opposite. We talked about her defense all year long. A year of development on the offensive side of the ball, and she's just going to be nasty. She's going to be so good.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's not going to take long for her to be a star. I think she'll be a star this year. I think she will be one of the best teams, one of the best players in the conference this year. I really don't have much doubt about what I've seen from her. You know, she will be very, very good.
Yeah. I'm fascinated to see what it looks like for these players, for some of the other returners to play on a team that's good, or at least could be good, or that has any sort of hopes for being good, or any plans for how to get there, or plays, or actual development, or coaching. Like, I'm just fascinated to see what that looks like, because so often last year, it's like, no matter what you do, no matter what Cheyenne Stubbs does, you're just beaten down by, like, you're just going to lose by 30. What's the point? I'm excited to see these players get to play for some kind of stakes at all, to have the ability to win games, to have that's a possibility that they could do that. It's just, that's going to be really fun to watch. It's going to be really nice to see that.
It's going to be incredible. And, like, I think one of the players almost that I'm most excited about, that it's not Gracie Johnson and Cheyenne Stubbs necessarily, because I think we saw at least flashes of what they're capable of. Mm. And I think, you know, you give Cheyenne Stubbs the ball, and you're doing your job in a lot of ways as a coach. You know, I think the team was not good, and I don't think the coaching staff was good last year, but I wouldn't say that they were misusing Cheyenne Stubbs. I think they were probably misusing Gracie Johnson, but I think that was more of a development thing and more of a injury thing. And she was behind and probably didn't have the support staff she needed to get caught back up. But a player that I think was just blatantly misused, there's a couple of them actually. The first one that I want to talk about is Samiana Sugaturaga.
Yeah.
I don't think that coaching staff ever really figured out what she is capable of and what she can do, and they were constantly asking her to do the wrong things. If Sugaturaga is your leading scorer, you're going to lose a lot of games. If she's getting the second most points, the second most rebounds, and the second most assists, you probably win that game by like 30. She is so good as like a role player. She plays I would say this a lot last year, where Gracie Johnson's 6'6", but moves like she's not. Samiana Sugaturaga is the exact opposite, where she sometimes plays like she's 6 foot, 6 foot six. Like, she would just get blocks that she had no business blocking shots on. She was getting rebounds that she had no business rebounding. She is such a good role player that was sometimes asked to be the star. And halfway through the season, they moved her from the bench. She did a great job leading the bench unit. I thought. But then she was asked to come in and start, and I don't know that she ever really figured that out. I think she could be a starter if she has her role clearly defined, and that is just like go play hard and do a lot of things, but you don't need to put the team on your back. She was just misused, and I can't wait to see what she can do. She was one of my favorite players to watch. And if you have like a young son or daughter and you want to like a role model of how to play basketball the right way, you don't really need to look past Semyonna Sugataraga. She plays hard every game in a way that's not like stat padding. Like she was just playing so hard in meaningless games, like genuinely meaningless games. They were closing out the year, a 4-win season, down by 30, and she was like running up and down the court.
Yeah.
I was so impressed by her, and I can't wait to see what she can do when she has like something to play for. The other one that I'm kind of excited for is Ivory Finley. I think Ivory Finley's good. I think she's got a good shot. I just, again, I don't know that the last coaching staff really ever figured her out. And I think she has a pretty high ceiling. I think she'll settle in as a nice role player here on this team. Same with like Tenedo. Like Isabella Tenedo is so funny because this is year two. We talked about this before the show. This is year two where she didn't even explore the transfer portal. Like she's just here to stay. She's
sticking around.
She's just here. Like she's just an Aggie, dude. Like she's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
You can change the coach. You could do whatever you want, but she's sticking around. And I'm kind of excited to see what she can do. There were flashes of like watching her and Stubbs play next to each other. That was just, it would be so annoying to play against these two girls, like two really, really quick, really, really tenacious players that are a little bit undersized to just get up in your grill and then suddenly you don't have the ball anymore.
Yeah.
And I think those two play really, really nicely off each other, especially on the defensive end. And I think under under Westbrook's system, I think you could see Isabella Tenedo actually play a lot more of a role than she did in the past, where I think Ard sometimes it was just like letting a dog off its collar and just like just go run around and like maybe like cause some havoc or something. And they didn't really know how to like point her in the right direction. And she sometimes just was set up to look like a Tasmanian devil, and she did. I think you give her some direction, player next to somebody like Cheyenne Stubbs in a full court press situation, and man, I don't want to be bringing up the ball against those two. Like she's really, really good. So that's some of the returners, and I could go on and on about this, the way that they brought these girls back. But I think headlined by Stubbs and Johnson, after that you can't go wrong. But I think following that up with, you know, Ivory Finley and Sugataraga, that's huge. Alize Verdan, same thing, just like probably a solid role player on a team that will win some games. I don't think she was ever really used last year, and being an okay role player, being a backup center, sometimes third string center, the way they were doing things last year on a losing team is nothing to write home about. And I think this year she'll be playing valuable minutes on a team that will probably win a lot more games. I think everybody who's staying is staying because they want to, and they are going to have a good time playing basketball this year. And like, I see that for every one of these players.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be winning games and probably playing a more valuable role in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll add two things on this, and then we'll talk about the roster building approach writ large. On Sugataraga, I'm just excited to see her win some games. She is a player who I think absolutely like everything you said,
she deserves
to win some games. She was working. It does not matter what the score was. Did not matter the situation within the season. She was, you know, battling for loose balls and rebounds, and never looked like a player on a 4-win team. I'm excited to see her win some games. I think she deserves it. She is the kind of player that belongs on a team that wins some games. And then Tenedo too, like it's not a perfect comparison because Ricky Harris is like 5'10", but Westbrook's did help to develop basically just a defensive enforcer at Ohio State in Ricky Harris, who She never really scored all that much. Her stats were never all that good. I think she's headed to Dayton. But she started for 2 or 3 years, and basically her entire job was just to make it hurt on defense. It's not going to be pleasant to play against Ohio State because Ricky Harris is here. She's just like, it's almost like playing Air Force in football, except rather than like, oh, your shins are going to hurt really bad. It's that they have, you know, Utah State has two sub 5'5" point guards. Your ribs are gonna hurt. It's gonna be unpleasant for your ribs to play against them because they're gonna be just ramming into you, going for the ball.
And instead of your knees, it's your ego.
It's
beautiful.
Yeah, it's an unpleasant experience for the core, I think, and that's really like that's a good approach defensively. It's just kind of concussive force at the general range of where the ball is gonna be. Just a couple of bloodhounds. Just go get the ball. I don't care how you do it. Just go get the ball.
It's nice. I just looked up Ricky Harris just to confirm that she's going to Dayton, which she is.
Yeah.
But her Instagram popped up and her handle is Rick Monster.
Yeah.
And I just love that. That is so funny. That is kind of the way that you would describe this. Isabella Tenedo in particular, but these two. When they're together, they're just monsters, and just moving the ball against those two is just difficult on a good day and embarrassing on a bad day.
Yeah,
like they're going to be fun.
Go make it unpleasant under their rim. I want every inbound has to be just not fun to do because it just wears you out. It wears you out having to deal with that. That's a good thing to have. For the roster building here, I've alluded to this a couple times now. I really like the way that they did this. I tweeted something to this effect as well. Not a ton of full-on portal additions. Sophie Sins, so she was not from community college or not from a JUCO. I was wrong on that. She came from Rhode Island. But they mostly didn't bring in transfers. They didn't bring in a ton of transfers. They really, a lot of the veteran core of this team is comprised of either players who are coming back. All four seniors are players who they retained. And then you have obviously sophomore Gracie Johnson and then a junior in Tenedo. And then they just, for players who have been at the college level before, they really just kind of tried to fill spots. They weren't necessarily looking to build the entire roster around that. You've got Heaton on the wing, 5'10 junior from College of Southern Idaho. You've got Sen from Rhode Island. She can step into a forward center spot. She's 6'3". She's a junior. You've got Mia Tarver from Salt Lake Community College coming in. She's a guard. She can shoot, 5'7", rising junior as well. And then you've got a bunch of freshmen. You've got Carly Lotta, who I mentioned earlier. You've got Carly Banks coming in from Idaho. You've got Livingston coming in from Ridgeline, Danae Skelton, who's coming in from Canada, and then Ava Smith, who was a standout at Union High School in Washington. This is year one is, you know, it's a lot easier to stick to a plan than year three when you're just looking for wins. And I will say that is fair. That is a problem that a lot of teams and coaches and programs in every sport run into, is that it's a lot easier to stick to a plan in year one than it is in year three. But when it comes to year one, this is the correct kind of plan to come with, where it is not, we're going to go build an entire team around portal players because we want to compete for championships right away. That is not the approach for this program right now. It's just not going to work. You can't do that.
No.
You have to build up some sort of cachet to give people a reason to believe that it is worth going to Utah State before you can do that. It's just not, you're fighting a losing battle at that point. And so they didn't do that. They didn't try to go portal hunting to fill out the entire roster. They grabbed a bunch of freshmen. They grabbed, you know, five freshmen coming in, I think, and good freshmen, almost all of them from the region, you know, almost all of them from the traditional recruiting base for Utah State. And they filled a lot of the roster out with players who can then develop further moving forward into the system, players who could then become foundational pieces moving forward. And Gracie Johnson would fit that billing as well as the lone sophomore. And then when they did need to fill out spots in the rotation, when they felt, okay, we need a player who can step in and contribute right away if some of these freshmen aren't quite ready, if whatever, you know, you just players who you want in the two deep who you know you can trust to play minutes. And they didn't go too crazy on that either. They got the one transfer, they got some players from JUCO ranks that they can trust. And then for the most part, they just retained players that they like, retained players who can fill a role and who have an instant, you know, obvious fit within the system. I like it. It feels sustainable. It feels like something you can build on both this season and see some improvement this year, and that can then pay dividends down the road as you move forward with a lot of players retaining eligibility. I think they're only going to lose, you know, at least to graduation, what, 3 or 4 players this year? I don't know what all the eligibility looks like.
Hey, I don't know how it works anymore.
It's still kind of a mess.
Because I thought we lost her last year, but she's back. So, like, might be here forever too. But
yeah, I would assume she's probably out of eligibility. I don't know on the other ones fully. We're still kind of in that weird where some players get 5 years. I don't know. But, like, that's...
I don't know where we're at.
Most of the roster, the majority of the roster has eligibility beyond this season. They didn't go all in on veteran players. I like that. I think that's a good approach. I think it's smart. I think that you're setting yourself up for future success by doing that and not making it so that every year has to be a portal churn rebuild. Which, like, you're going to have attrition. That is the nature of the beast now. You're not going to keep around every single one of those players who has remaining eligibility. But having a core of players who can continue on through the program for multiple years and who can grow within the system is just that's better than needing to bring in an entire new team every single season. That is not a sustainable way to build a program that doesn't have a history of success. You just can't do that because you're not going to get good enough players. I think this makes a lot more sense than you know, the alternative. And I like the approach that they took here. I think that this was it's not conservative. I don't think that would be the right way to say it. I would describe it as a correct assessment of what the program needed. I don't think that they were I don't think they were being overly aggressive or anything, but I don't think that they were being like cautious. I think it's just this is what makes sense for what they need right now. What you need more than anything else for this team, along with retaining some of those key players, is just saying that you're here to a lot of high school coaches in the area. And I think that's really what they did. Hey, we're here.
Exactly
we're taking players again. We're not just going to sign a bunch of transfers.
Yeah.
Your players can come here and we would like to have them. That's a pretty good place to start. That's what they needed more than anything else, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'm glad you brought that up because that's exactly where I was going to go, you know, right after we, you know, right now. Because you mentioned some of these girls were that he brought in were kind of from the region, your Idahos and stuff. And I think that's huge. I mean, even two of the people that he brought in, Mia Tarver from Slick, she was at East High School. Like, she's a Salt Lake City native.
Yeah.
The other one that she brought, that, you know, that they brought in from the College of Southern Idaho went to Lehigh. You need those relationships fixed. And we talked a lot about that, rightfully so, with Ridgeline, because Ridgeline is a very, very good school, and getting Elise Livingston was a huge step in the right direction there. But you need more than just Cache Valley. I mean, you need to be the number one option in Cache Valley, but you need people at Lehigh to know you have a school.
Yep.
Look at our football team and our basketball team throughout the years. None come to my head in basketball, but in football, like, look at how many guys we get from Lehigh.
Yeah.
It's a big school. It's talented. It's a populated area. You need those relationships to be much better than they have been. East High School as well. Look at how many players we've had at East High School across all sports throughout our years. It's a lot. You need East High School to know where you're at and know that you're accepting players. And so both of those came through the transfer portal and not the transfer portal, but from JUCO. And like, Slick had Verdan. Like, Verdan came here from Slick too, but I think this feels different, where it's a local girl that you're getting from Slick. Huge step in the right direction. But I think, and you mentioned this, it starts with retaining what you had. And I think they didn't go out and they didn't go for – like their home runs, their big shots, their moon shots were two girls that were already on the roster. I think Gracie Johnson and Cheyenne Stubbs were the moon shots. Those were the two home runs that you hit, and then you built everything around them. You didn't try to go hit a home run in the transfer portal. And I think that shows, you know, you alluded to this, a really, really high level of self-awareness for Wes Brooks. When Wes Brooks is the head coach at Ohio State, he can do whatever he wants, and he will go and get transfers very easily when he's doing that. Utah State women's basketball is different than the team he will coach at Ohio State one day. And this is one that needs to rely a lot more on local talent forever. That is not unique to this team or this period of time. Look at the men's team. The men's team just can't stop winning, and we still rely on local talent. And so reestablishing those relationships and knowing who you are, knowing what Utah State is, it's just showing so much self-awareness by Wes Brooks and his staff. I mean, this is galaxy brain stuff. It would have been probably much easier for him to go and bring in a bunch of the girls that, through the transfer portal that he had relationships with before at Ohio State that maybe weren't going to get time, and get a bunch of East Coast and Midwest girls. That probably would have been easier, and they probably would have had a winning season. This is the right way to build a program. Wes Brooks knows that he is essentially building this program from the ground up. He's not doing what Blake Anderson did a few years ago in football, where you're just kind of getting it back on the right track, or even what Craig Smith did in men's basketball. You are not re you're not waking up a winning program. You are building one from the ground up, and he is laying a really strong foundation.
As much of like as much as anything else, year one in this situation where it is a true, it is a build. It is not a. It's not even a rebuild. It is a.
It's
It's
not
a
a rebuild.
build.
It's
It's a
yeah.
full on.
It's
You just have to build it, for nothing has ever been built there before. It is as much about having like, and I think they will have some success on the floor, and that's going to be important too. But like, you are doing your messaging with this. This is a messaging kind of class. This is the kind of. You have to come in and send a specific message, and if you come in and you sign a bunch of players who weren't playing a ton in the Big Ten, who you want to plug in right away, if you come in and do that, the message that you are sending is that that's what you want to do, that you want to be the portal program, which maybe you can do that. Maybe it didn't really work this last time, but
Maybe,
that's it's not a great. It's not a great way to do that. It's not necessarily the way that you want to try and build a program. It's really hard to do that, because the best programs in the portal are ones that, one, have money, which I don't think Utah State has a ton of NIL money for the women's side. It might have some, but it's not a huge amount. And two, they are established. They're programs where you know you can go and win and be developed and all of that good stuff. Utah State doesn't have that on the women's side. It just doesn't. And so the message that you send when you're coming into this job is very important. And the message that he has sent to local high school coaches is, we're not going to do that. We're not going to go and take a bunch of players that you've never heard of from schools that are nowhere near where you are. We want your players. We want players who are from here. We want to be a local program first, and then when we need to fill holes in the roster, we'll go and do that. But the players who are D1 caliber in this region should be going to Utah State. That is the message that you send when you build a roster this way. And high school coaches are not dumb. They see that. They know exactly what that is. They know exactly what it is when, even if you are fighting a losing battle and a recruitment that you're just not going to win, just the fact that you take the time as a new coach to show up and say, "Hey, I'm here. We want to talk to this player." So on and so forth, just establishing that you are willing to put in the work to drive around the state, to drive around the region, and meet with coaches, meet with players, talk to them about what you want the program to be. That means a lot to people. It means a lot to have you do that, because there's a lot of programs that just don't do that anymore. And there's a space you can fill as Utah State to do that. That means it just it really does it that word spreads really fast in the coaching community at any level. And it's true in the college ranks, it's true in the high school ranks, it's true everywhere. Coaches love to talk to each other. Coaches love to gossip about, especially high school coaches, about programs, about places where they're sending their kids or not sending their kids or whatever. They love that, and they love to be the center of attention for a day when coach comes and visits for whatever reason, even just to sit down and talk to the coach and the staff and just see what they've got going on. That means a lot to those people, and those relationships are very important to establish if you want to be able to sign anybody locally. If you want to be able to sign any high school recruits, that's the way you have to do that. And I think that they did a really good job of messaging that this time around, of just we're not gonna take the we're not gonna take the easy route here. We're gonna build this the right way, and we're gonna do it with players who have local ties and with programs that are around the school where, yeah, you know, your parents can drive to a game and you have that sell, and we're not just going to go get a bunch of seniors from wherever. I think that's the right approach. I think that's what they needed.
Yeah, I think so. I think this is perfect. And it goes both ways too, right? Like you said, high school coaches are not dumb. Like, it means a lot when you show up and they notice when you don't. And I think that has been on display with this program in the past.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think I don't think there was a coaching staff that we've had in a long time that would have had Ainsley Jenks send her 4-year starting point guard to us. Uh-huh. And I think getting that at least tentative stamp of approval from her is huge. And that goes a long way.
Yep.
But it really just, it's as simple as just letting them know, like, hey, we're open for business. We're back. We're here. But like in Horton Hears a Who, you know, that movie from like a decade ago, probably now, where it's uh-huh. like, they're all in the spec yelling like, we are here, we are here, like into their megaphones and whatever. That's what Westbrook and his staff is doing. Like, just, hey, we exist over here. Yeah. And that's step one. Step two is getting, you know, Ainsley Jenks to start sending you the best of the best and Jalen Moore from his camp and you know, teams like that.
Yeah.
I'd rather have the best of the best that Ainsley Jenks and Jalen Moore have to offer than, you know, leftovers from the Big Ten. Yeah. And that is very, very true. And it always will be true. And Westbrook gets that, and he's building a foundation that will outlive even him if this goes as even remotely as well as I think it will go.
Yeah, yeah. So you threw me off there a second ago because you mentioned Horton Hears a Who as coming out a decade ago, and I was like, what? I thought that came out in the 1970s. There was one that came out in 2008. You were right. I was only familiar with the one that came out in 1970. So
oh my.
Anybody who remembers the Chuck Jones television special version of Horton Hears a Who that I think I watched as it was the second half of the VCR copy of the Grinch that I had, and Horton Hears a Who would come on afterward. Anybody who remembers that one, shout out to you. I'm sure your ears were tingling funny when you heard a decade ago as well, because I was like, wait a second.
Well, I didn't realize that I still undershot by like 5 years because 2008 was so long ago.
Yeah.
I thought you were going the other way with that and you were going to do the whole, oh man, that was, it feels like 5 years ago, but you went, three, four, 5 decades ago.
Yeah,
so that's
even further.
Very impressive.
Crazy.
Have you never seen the new one?
I don't think so. Crazy cast on this thing.
I know. It's got like a superstar cast, dude. If you, okay, now that the season's over, you've got to watch it. Steve Carell, Jim Carrey, Jonah Hill, Seth Rogen, Will Arnett. It's unbelievable.
Amy Poehler in this thing as like the 10th actor listed. Jesse McCartney's in this. What in the world?
Yeah, it's such a good cast.
That's
crazy. It's actually like a really funny movie. Selena Gomez is in it.
Yeah, Selena Gomez is one of the last character, one of the last actors mentioned in the Wikipedia. Okay, well.
It's so funny. You got to watch it. You got to watch it now the season's over.
I'll have to do that. I'll have to get around to that. I'm only familiar with the 70s.
Glad we somehow landed on this, but you'll understand that reference a lot more when you watch it. So get back to me on that, because that reference went over your head.
Yeah, but I remember the 70s one paled in comparison to The Grinch, but you're putting it up against one of the classics. That's a hard one to compete with. Nobody's beating The Grinch. Come on. The
Nobody.
Original Grinch? No way. Not going to happen.
It's a good one. I love that one.
All right, football. Let's finish it out here with football. We're not going to linger for too long, but there are some portal additions and subtractions, some roster stuff going on that we're going to talk about. We'll start here with a little bit of what was once bad news that has returned to good news. Rasul Faison, after a very, very brief foray into the portal, announces his return to Utah State. So Utah State brings back a pretty important piece of its backfield. They are no longer just relying on Robert Briggs and some new faces. Rasul Faison, he looked around in the portal and I guess just didn't really see anything that was worth leaving Utah State for, and Utah State brings him back. Good. That's good news for Utah State. I know that that much has been made about Blake Anderson's policy of once guys go into the portal, they don't come back. I think that in most circumstances, yes, that makes sense. In some circumstances, you got to be a little bit flexible because there's no reason to get rid of Rasul Faison just because he entered the portal on what was probably some bad advice and then saw that there was really nothing out there for him worth leaving for. There's no reason to twist the knife on a guy like that at that point. You just welcome him back in, say, okay, yeah, it happens. There's a lot of people out there right now offering very bad advice to college football and basketball players on what kind of money they could get where if they were to enter the portal that then isn't real and was never real and was just for basically somebody trying to make money off of a guy. And yeah, you got to be a little bit flexible sometimes because there's no way for him to know that. It's not his fault that happened. And I think that he came to the conclusion that Utah State would be the best place for him. And I think that Utah State was right to say, yep, well, we're happy to have you, you know, like nothing ever, no harm, no foul, didn't go anywhere, didn't even take any visits or anything, just looked around, didn't see what you liked. Okay, good deal for all involved. It works out, and you know, it's fine. You live with that. He's not the kind of player that you want to be just cutting loose for you know, petty reasons. There's no reason to do that.
Yeah. No, I get why he has that rule in place, but like you said, I think it should be kind of more of a guideline, and I think it's probably a good guideline where it's like, hey, you don't get to go and shop yourself around while you're showing up at our practice and whatever, and you don't get to go out there and we're nobody's backup. You know, I think that's kind of the idea. Like, you don't get to go out and try to find a better option. And if you don't find one, you come back. I get the mindset there, but you also have to have some flexibility. And like you said, there are some bad actors in play right now that are just giving players blatantly bad advice, and sometimes probably intentionally bad advice. So you also have to read the room and kind of understand the reality of the situation here. And like you said, he was in the portal and he came right back. He did not take any visits. He wasn't doing anything.
I think it was like two or three days between his entry and his then exit. It was not long.
Which if we've learned anything, if it's a school down south, they would be signed already by that time. So clearly they were, you know, that's fine. Like, you just bring him back. I like that.
Yeah. If you know, two or three days later, a guy comes to you and he says, "Hey, I think I made a mistake. I'd like to come back." Then, yeah, okay. There's no reason to go crazy on a guy for that. It is what it is.
Yeah. Deal with it internally. Yeah. Make him run laps or something. with it internally. But yeah, get him back on the roster.
Yeah. No reason to try and. I mean, you like running the risk of like potentially ruining a guy's career by doing that if like he doesn't find
just to prove a point, right?
You don't need to do that. I don't think that Utah State is in the business of doing that. I have no issue with bringing him back. I think that's
I love it.
Talk to each other like adults and come to the right conclusion, and I think that's what happened here.
I think so.
On the departure side, there are a couple. Portal is closed, as we said, but there were a couple late exits. Presumed starters from the defense, Anthony Switzer, as not necessarily a huge surprise entry, but a later on entry, kind of a surprise. I mean, he was one of the leaders of the defense. Can't really blame him for this, given his landing spot. He's headed to Arkansas. That's back home. You know, that's a chance to start, presumably for an SEC school back home, team that he grew up rooting for. I can't really fault a guy for doing that.
Yeah, this is the type of move that if we're on the other side of it, and we have been, like, we're stoked, right? Like, if we have a guy that goes to Skyline and then ends up out of state somewhere and then comes home, like, it happens, man. Like, it happens.
And you know, the chance to do that in his last year play for, you know, an SEC school that he grew up, grew up rooting for. I can't really, it is what it is. There's nothing insidious going on. It's just, that's an opportunity that you don't get a lot. And I don't know that he was expecting to get, and he got, and it is what it is. You take that chance, I think, if you get it, and Utah State will be fine. Utah State will survive. It stinks to lose him. He's a good player, but they'll be fine. Kind of a similar situation, not exactly the same, but sort of similar, with another linebacker, Sean Dolak, who had transferred in after, I think, 3 or 4 years at Buffalo. He transferred right back to Buffalo. Again, nothing insidious going on here. This is not a matter of, oh, well, Utah State got outbid by Buffalo or anything like that. There was no tampering. This one's very cut and dry. He was homesick. He missed his, you know, his family's all still in Buffalo. I think he's from the area. He just wanted to go back home. It is what it is. It stinks for Utah State because I think he's a really, really good player, and the linebacker room They did pick up a guy we're going to talk about in a second, but the linebacker room is now suddenly very thin, save basically for Max Alford, who, you know, coming off of a pretty severe injury. I have a lot of faith in Max Alford, but we'll see. it's a tough loss, but it is another one of those where it's just, you know, what are you going to do? Sometimes this happens. He moved across the country and, you know, realized that he was homesick and wanted to go back to Buffalo, and I can't really blame a guy for that. It is what it is. That's human nature, and he tried it, and it just wasn't going to work out. And you can't really hold it against somebody for doing something like that.
Yeah, I put these two kind of in the same boat. The only difference there, because like you said, they're both just going home, which is something that, like, this is the good side of the transfer portal. Like, this is, I think, what the transfer portal was for. And this is the stuff that I like to see, even when it's at my expense. You get a guy like Sean Dolak, who played for Buffalo. He's from West Seneca, which is basically Buffalo. And he came out to Utah State, gave it a shot, didn't work out, goes home. Like, that is what the portal's for. I hate to say it, but same with Switz. Like, you came out, played for Utah State, did a great job, and a spot opened up for you at your home, you know, at your home school that you grew up rooting for, that plays in the SEC. That's what it's for. And hopefully they both get playing time and all that. These are not the transfers that make me think that the system is broken. These are fine. The one thing that's a little bit of a bummer with Switz is, like, he was, it seemed like, kind of a big part of the rally last year of, you know, hey, I'm coming back, you know, let's run this thing back. Losing a guy like that is never fun, but again, like, I don't know what you'd expect these guys to do. I think they both did probably what most people would do given that opportunity. So
yeah,
you know, stings, but it's fine.
Yeah, and I will say, this is, I'm not, you know, we talk positively and negatively about this football program basically depending on what it is that we have to talk about. I will say, like, for as much has been made about the frustrations with the run it back that kind of wasn't here after the spring portal, where you have a lot of those guys departing, they kept the best two. They kept the two best players. They kept the two guys who it was most important that they announced that they were coming back. Those guys are still at Utah State. Jalen Royals and Ike Larson are still in Logan. Those are those are the two that you couldn't lose. Those are the two you could not afford to lose. Everybody else, you know, you have a day where you can be upset about it, and it's frustrating. Ultimately, you'll live. Jalen Royals and Ike Larson were the two that you had to keep, and Utah State kept them. They're fine. Those are the big two, and they kept them. And I think that had either of those guys departed, it would have been a very, very it would have been a very bad conversation to have on here. But they didn't. They're still in Logan. They will be playing for Utah State this year, barring something crazy happening. I think those are the two best players on the team, and two of the best players in the, you know, the G5 ranks, honestly. And they kept them both around. That's good news. You can live with these. I think it's not ideal, but you can live with these. I don't know that you could live with losing Jalen Royals or Ike Larson. That would be pretty difficult, and they're not going to. So we don't have to worry about it. On the linebacker side, I wonder maybe that I would not be surprised if more help even beyond this is on the way. But Utah State does have a new player incoming here, Clyde Washington, who's transferring in from Purdue. Veteran player, I think he's a senior, 6'3", 245 is what he's listed at. He played 271 snaps for Purdue this last season per PFF. He played a lot down the stretch, last 8 games or so. He was up over 20 snaps in every game. Good tackler, pretty good in coverage, surprisingly good in coverage, honestly, for how big he is. You don't see a ton of 250-pound linebackers with a 62.8 coverage grade on PFF. That's pretty solid. He didn't do a ton of it, but I like that. It tells me he moves pretty well. Like I said, good tackler. I would guess that he's coming in for presumably the starting job next to Max Alford. That makes sense. He's, you know, he could take up space with that size. Very good tackler. I would guess that he's probably going to improve as a run defender with the change in competition level from the Big Ten down to the Mountain West. Good pickup. Good late pickup. Not an ideal circumstance to have to replace a pair of starting linebackers at this point, basically in the offseason, but Washington looks like a plug-and-play starter to me. I think that's a good addition.
Yep, I would agree with all that. We kind of talked about him a little bit before the show. Surprisingly, moved surprisingly well for his size. I mean, you know, played a lot of snaps at Purdue. I think the change in competition level is probably going to be a good thing for him.
Yeah,
he's just plug and play. I mean, I'm still worried. You're kind of filling, two players. You lose two, add one, so you probably need some more help on the way. But yeah, this is a good start. I like Clyde Washington. I think, you know, he's gonna be good, probably in that mic position. But great start, great yeah. start. You got to go do something else. You need more. But it's a great start.
Yeah, yeah. I think that Dolak was kind of supposed to be the MJ Tufisi replacement. Here's the MJ Tufisi replacement.
You just got it up, baby. Let's
just
go.
Got another one. That's fine. It's not the rarest kind of linebacker in the world. It's not impossible to find bigger bodies who can just rack up tackles, and they got one, and that's good. He played at a Power Four school. Good addition. Also on the addition side, I don't really have anything to say about Iowa Central Community College defensive tackle Isaiah Bruce. I know he was productive there in six games. I haven't watched him, but a little bit more depth on the defensive line, potentially a two deep player. I don't know that he'd start, but we'll see. And then quarterback. We got a new quarterback in the mix here. Utah State needed at least one more quarterback. I'm sure given their propensities, this will be one of five additional portal transfers into the room for some reason. But yeah. if it stands as this, I like this as the addition to a veteran room. That would be CJ Tiller, who transfers in from Boise State. Doesn't have to go far. He visited, I believe, this past weekend and committed on that visit. Rising sophomore or rising redshirt freshman. I don't know exactly how much he played for Boise this past year. I think he did play. He might have played in the bowl game. Former three-star, pretty well-touted recruit, highly touted recruit in 2023. Number 840 overall player in the 2023 class, number 43 quarterback. He comes from what is basically a quarterback factory in Rancho Cucamonga, which I think is where CJ Stroud went, if I remember correctly. I'm going very deep into the recesses of my brain there. I know he was
going
from,
off the dome at 11 o'clock at night.
I know he was from Rancho Cucamonga. I don't know if there's another school there, but he was from there.
I don't know why. One of the players we talked about earlier went to Rancho, and I can't remember who it was now. Oh. But he was a basketball player, so it's not like it matters. But yeah.
Let me see. Now I have to know. Now I need to know.
I'm looking it up now. He's from Rancho.
Yeah. Did he play there? Let's see.
Yes, he did.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Nobody's
put it in books.
Yeah.
Another win for Patrick.
The locate that was used to be a game that we would play in the Buckeye Sports Bulletin offices on publishing night, because we would be in there on a Sunday night until anywhere from midnight to 3 in the morning. We would be in there very late, and a lot of it, like later on in the day, was kind of just waiting because it was sort of out of our hands. The editing on our side was mostly done, and we were just waiting on the last stuff to come through. And so we would just sort of sit in there, and we would do the full-on recruiting roundups within the paper and all that stuff, and we would all kind of pitch in. And so we all had a decent idea for who the guys in the class were and all that. And so we would just rattle off names of guys, and then the other person in the room, this is usually me and Wyatt, who came on the show recently, rattle off a name of a guy, and then the other person would then be tasked with naming the high school and where he was from, just off of memory. Or, even more fun, we would just name the school or the high, or the city, and the other person would have to try and figure out who that player was, according to the school. And so if you need any information on where a signee at Ohio State from roughly 2019, the class of 2019, 20-ish, through like 2021, 22, where he went to high school, I've got you. It's permanently seared in my brain. So Rancho Cucamonga,
might be a fun off-season segment.
Yeah.
Also, you know how I just said, oh, there was a player that we were just talking about that went to Rancho Cucamonga? Mm-hmm. It's this guy. It's this guy. That's why it was like fresh in my mind, because I was looking at him before the show. And I remember thinking, Rancho Cucamonga, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then I just promptly forgot who it was. And
Now you know. So CJ Tiller.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Rancho Cucamonga.
Anyways, and CJ Stroud for what it's worth.
Yeah, you know, I don't
for
know.
For those if, keeping score at home.
I wonder, there's a year difference. There's a 3-year difference. Maybe there was a guy in between the two, but I do wonder if Tiller replaced him directly. That'd be a pretty good guy to learn from as a freshman in high school. You could do worse.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, good player. Good size for a quarterback. 6'2", 190 coming out of high school. I don't know what he is right now. I think that if you're, you know, as a future starter, makes a lot of sense. I, you know, we'll see what that development looks like for him, but I know Boise State was very excited when they brought him in, and Utah State is equally excited now because there's really not a huge difference in getting him now than getting him last year. Doesn't really make all that much difference. Very, very talented player. I think that he has a bright future. Excited to see him in Logan. I believe he was recruited to Utah State even out of high school and then picked Boise, but not this time around. So Utah State wins that one. Interested to see what comes of that, but they have their young quarterback. It's not just seniors now. That's good news. That's a positive for Utah State there. I don't know if I have a ton else on football, but good news on that front.
Yeah, no, it's mostly good news on football. I think we are recovering from what we described as a small car crash, I guess, at the top of the show. It didn't. We're getting there. We're getting cleaned up, and I think you're starting to see what this team is going to look like. The bottom line, like you said, we're bringing in some good guys, and I think we could talk a lot more about Tiller just because he is pretty good. But for now, I mean, it really is just about we kept the guys we needed to. We kept Ike Larson. We kept Jalen Royals. That's probably what it – all of this transfer news, all this transfer talk, that's what it comes down to, in my opinion, is we kept the guys we needed to, and we lost some guys. We brought in some guys. The team is still built around Royals and Larson on either side of the ball. And I don't know that these transfers, the incoming or outgoing ones, really moved the needle that much. I think we're still more or less what we were. It just might look slightly different. The names are different.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give I think I remember seeing this. I'll give a shout out to Cooper Bissett as well, who I believe was correctly taking the time to talk the talk a little bit as the portal closed. I don't believe there were any transfer departures on the offensive line that Utah State was not like planning on. So that's good. That's good news. We've not talked about any major departures up there. Shout out to Cooper Bissett. You've earned the right to talk. You've maintained your room. It's a hard room to keep around. There's a lot of guys in an offensive line room. Good on him. That'll be helpful. That's very nice to have to not be
that is good.
Not be losing guys up front.
Speaking of the offensive line, I don't know if you saw this yet, but Scotty G tweeted it out and said that a source close to the family, and you know, if you're listening to this, you probably know who Scotty's co-host is. Mm-hmm. A source close to the family has confirmed that Tommy Rock Olsen, son of Hans, has received an offer at Utah State. Mm-hmm. So that is, you know, that's fun stuff. That is, I mean, honestly, not like a small deal. That's not just a big deal because of who this guy's dad is and who he talks to and stuff. He's good, and it is part of the Olsen family who – again, if you're a Utah State fan, you know the name very well. They are related. It is the same family. So that is a little bit of extra news for you. So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Speaking of well-known radio voices in Logan as well.
I do
want to close the show with a shout out to Al Lewis. Congratulations on his long career, storied career, and his retirement. A person who I think is really synonymous with Utah State sports for a lot of Utah State fans, a huge number of Utah State fans, a man who I was, you know, very glad to get the chance to kind of work alongside for a couple of years here, and a legend in Logan. So shout out to Al Lewis as well, and congratulations to him on his career and his retirement. Well deserved for Al.
Yeah, absolutely. I would echo everything that you just said and just say, thank you. Thank you, Al. He was on the radio for a long time in my growing up and others as well. So thank you for your career. And I would wish him the best in retirement, and congratulations on a very, very good career.
Yep. That'll do it for us here, Parker. Unless you've got anything else, we'll get out of here and we'll be back in a couple days with a Q&A show.
Yeah, let's do it. See you in a couple days.